Welcome to the Industry 4.0 podcast with Grantech.
Welcome to today's episode of the Industry 4.0 podcast with Grantech. The Industry 4.0 podcast with Grantech delivers a look into the world of manufacturing with a focus on stories and trends that lead to better solutions. Our guests share tips and outcomes that will help improve your productivity. So my name is Dave McKenna. I'm a new host for this, coming in on this season three. I've been working at Grantech for 20 years, hit my 20 years this year, starting as a programmer down in the trenches of food and pharmaceutical plants, working up to manager. And now I am program manager, director of smart manufacturing solutions officially for our label verification and label printer control lines of business. Today on our show, I'm joined by Lisa Kronk from Grantech, another Grantech person. Happy to join and have you here, Lisa. Lisa is currently a project manager at Grantech. She has over 13 years of experience in engineering and systems integration. Lisa currently focuses on projects for large food and bev manufacturers. She served in the Canadian Forces, something I did not know. And she's experienced working in mining, life sciences, and CPG industries. Lisa, thank you for joining me on Industry 4.0 podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Awesome. So today we're going to talk Industry 4.0, your insights, experiences, and I just want to kick it off with something light. There's a riddle. We have a link I was given by our wonderful marketing folks, a riddle generator. Artificial intelligence is really taking jobs from people all over the place, or maybe not, or getting itself into trouble. I think that the jury is still out on that one, but it can spit out a riddle. So what is put on a table, cut, but never eaten?
What about a deck of cards?
A pack of, you're correct.
Yeah?
You're correct.
You got beat it. AI.
Yes, you beat the machine. Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us. We start all our episodes the same way with a broad open-ended question. What does Industry 4.0 mean to you?
So I think I'll answer you with sort of a broad answer as well. So to me, it's a fundamental shift in industry's new normal, like a mass shift in adopting the new technologies that are associated with Industry 4.0. So blockchain, AI, simulation, augmented reality, big data. It's a high level term to me, the same way that the previous industrial revolutions are high level terms. It really is a bit of a dynamic idea, based on a sort of fundamental technologies.
How many customers do you see, or percentage, are picking up all of these? Like, are companies in your perspective, it's a new normal, fundamental shift, new technologies, broad slate of new technologies. Are customers picking up all of these? Are customers going deep on some of them? Are some picking all of them broadly, some deep? What kind of a mix do you see on who does how much of what on this?
So what I'm seeing is a lot more of companies dipping their toes into the water. So trying to get a good visual on what their processes currently look like. I'm seeing a lot more in the news and in, you know, magazines and online about the leading companies doing more of the sort of complicated or newer technologies. But I think that the majority are still just getting their feet wet.
I mean, with something that broad and that expensive, and I can certainly see a lot of companies are, where do you start kind of piece. And what excites manufacturing executives about Industry 4.0?
So the priorities for the executive level seem to be more grounded in, you know, finance. So the ability to identify cost savings and the ability to have reliable production, which will decrease losses. They also want visibility into their processes so they can ensure consistency for future planning, whether that means, you know, expansion or just market security, and then to deliver on forecasts for their customers. They want to have line of sight to what they're doing and have it, you know, consistent and reliable.
And break up that hidden, or finally get the data to peer into that hidden factory or the what's really going on. What do you think at a plant manager level, what do they see in Industry 4.0? What's in it for them? What are their concerns or the advantages to them from Industry 4.0?
So the plant manager level, they're accountable to sort of different things. So from what I'm seeing, the priorities lie more in the day-to-day performance. So they also want the process visibility, but it's more to ensure that, you know, equipment is reliable. They can have information on, you know, downtime reasons and things that they can, you know, forecast. If they know that, you know, an equipment is performing in a certain way, they're getting feedback on that, they can be more proactive and just manage the day-to-day a little smoother.
I mean, uptime's always been such a critical piece for plant managers, for their performance, for being able to hit their case targets, and which is I think a lot of how they're managed and measured, and their sites are managed and measured. You hear a lot about predictive maintenance, a lot about predictive maintenance, and some of this has been around in the past. And I remember having conversations. We were going to do an integration project to collect data from equipment to pump into SAP, and the customer at the time, they liked the idea of it and the technology. This is many years ago, but they think they weren't ready. They didn't have the maintenance data to back it. Even if they had the data, they wouldn't know what to do with it. So hopefully, I think AI can, if you just pump all that in, it'll magically know that how many hours is when you need to go fix that, or when to engage.
For sure.
Where do you think are the best ROI opportunities that you see in Industry 4.0?
So to me, it's a little more industry and, you know, process specific, depending on, you know, what are your goals? What are you trying to do? Where you want to invest the money is really going to be independent for each company. I'm trying to think of some examples, like pure manufacturing. They want to probably invest a little bit more in, you know, overall equipment efficiencies and in MES and, you know, simulation and things like that. Whereas if they're, you know, construction industry, like eventually we'll start adopting things as well. That might be a little bit more in the augmented reality space. I think it really is going to depend on what you're doing. And that's sort of this phase of Industry 4.0, I get the sense that people are really trying to figure out where to put their energy and where to put their attention.
I've seen some funny example of an ROI opportunity for one company becomes a cost for another, where we're seeing heavy automation in warehousing and distribution and more package scanning, and that requires more labeling and more barcoding. Well, that pushes that Industry 4.0 initiative up there, and robotics is pushing requirements upstream to food manufacturers to now meet compliance with that, and additional labeling and more data on the label and more accurate, more reliable scans, barcode scannable labels. And so it's an interesting one company's ROI might be another company's pain point, but
definitely.
What do you think is the biggest challenge you foresee manufacturers will face in the next 5 years?
So I think there's two things, and it's a little bit more on, you know, not on the technology side. I see it more on personnel. So employees with the right skills, and then also sort of mentoring and loyalty. So employees with the right skills, you know, the technology progresses so quickly, but the education system does not necessarily. It's a bit of a, you know, slow moving ship. Especially at the lower level. So understanding what we need to be teaching the kids these days, you know, to put them in a good place. I have kids, so, you know, I can say that. But, you know, instilling in them the skills that will be required to adapt as the technology changes. It seems like there's a wide range of jobs in the middle between the doers, like the millwrights and the plumbers and the electricians, and the innovators, the thought leaders and the developers and the technologies. And in the middle, it seems like we're seeing a lot more of those jobs continue to automate. And there's still some sort of intangibles about the impact and timing of AI. So you can teach hard skills. So I think that will always, you know, in the foreseeable future, be something that, you know, is easy to invest in. But I'm not sure how we're going to approach teaching, you know, adaptability and outside the box thinking. That's going to allow people to, you know, keep up and keep interested when things are going to be changing constantly. You have to have lifelong learner mentality. And, you know, some people just don't want to. Some people like to do their job and go home, and that's totally fine. But the other gap is more in, you know, mentoring and loyalty. So I think our society is still in a bit of a wobble in the aftermath of COVID. We're still trying to figure out, you know, what the workplaces look like. A lot of expertise has retired or is approaching retirement. And there's a unique perspective and, you know, personal priorities that we see coming out of younger generations. And I think we're missing, you know, a golden opportunity for knowledge transfer in a lot of cases. We don't have folks that, you know, are starting 30-year careers in one location anymore. So I think that's going to be a challenge that manufacturers are going to be facing.
I mean, those are all huge points, and you kind of, when you're just got your head down day to day, and I've got kids just trying to hold water at work and family and all that. This is kind of an odd era, or maybe everybody thinks they're in a unique time or a more challenging time or a more changing time where, yeah, you've got huge retirement surge of people who knew how stuff worked and could keep things running. And then you have COVID, which brought this large amount of remote work, which is ebbing back slightly, but there's still lots of remote work. So I can go get that remote work job. Do I want to go into manufacturing even as a career? Because, hey, I might have to go in to touch stuff and do things in person for that. And then I can't run a laundry at the same time. So you've got all this remote work kind of hanging there as a, you could go do that and have that life or not. And then you've got AI coming in, which is such an unknown. Is it going to displace large numbers of people or not? Or is it all talk, or are there certain areas? And I imagine this is going to be the case where there's certain, your point to it. It's not going to touch operators. You still need someone running that machine, loading things. You still need the millwright. This is more of the like past automation really hit blue collar and operator level people significantly. That's probably all done at this point. This level of automation is more the white collar office worker or programmers or technical writers or more of that level of people. So, but how much is it? Or how much of that? And when and where and how good is it? Or what are the consequences for if it's wrong? Are they so big that you kind of may want to steer away from it in places? It's an interesting time. Certainly a lot of things going on, pushing and pulling in different places. And certainly agree labor being a challenge. And even actually we've had customers, I've heard of this, that because they face these labor challenges and you're bringing in so many new people, things like safety are not the same. Because the previous cohort of workers knew how the equipment worked. They took the safety training, but then they also knew what was going on, were more careful just from the experience, or when they started, things were more dangerous. So as they've improved, it's been made even safer for them. Someone coming in cold is not like that, or they're not finding that. So companies having to invest in safety more, again, driven because of the labor challenges. So yeah, it's a challenging time. What are some of the most common problems that you see that customers want to solve?
So what I'm seeing is mostly access to information and data and analytics. They want to see where they hit and where they missed. They want visibility into these things. But just having all of the data doesn't necessarily help. You know, there can be too much in a lot of cases. And if you don't have the people, you know, boots on the ground championing the, you know, new technologies, it gets lost. You know, there's too much to just, you know, absorb. Having real time and historical data helps, but like, as I said, how much is the right amount? What's the best way to handle the data? Which parameters are most important? Which technologies can help get them to the next step? So those are the types of things that I'm seeing.
So they really need to know their own business.
Yes.
I mean, yes, you need some data person to come in and collect that stuff and store it and save it and make it accessible. But there's a real need for the business side. Are you seeing them adapt to that? Are you seeing the business people be able to work well in the data world? Or is it the data world people merge into the business? Or which who's helping who, or how does that?
I think that sort of goes both ways, but I think it sort of ties into the last issue that we were talking about, the personnel. You know, there are smart people that are pushing this and that want this, but they are spread thin, or, you know, there's not enough of them, or they're not staying long enough to, you know, identify and see these things through all the way. or to be a champion to, you know, get more people involved at the site level. So it's sort of a, you know, a snowballing issue a little bit.
Where do you see the next opportunity for growth in Industry 4.0 that's going to further help manufacturing customers?
So I see, and you know, maybe it's just the jobs that I'm exposed to a little bit more, but there's a lot of, you know, individual inputs, a lot of, you know, sensors and cameras that are extracting data from processes. But I'm interested to know sort of what comes next. If there's a way, you know, if there's a singular camera on a room that can identify, you know, that there is a label missing over here and that there's, you know, something is missing from a clamshell over here, all of the individual inputs that require, you know, maintenance and management. And I think that seeing where the technology goes on the manufacturing side with that is going to be really interesting.
I mean, if you can do magic with cameras, that's the dream. I'll share that dream of, you can just tap into the security camera and boom, it's going to tell magically
everything. And you know, maybe that's where AI starts to, you know, the intangible AI piece that we're all kind of just, you know, learning about and seeing what those impacts are going to look like. You know, that I think, again, timescale, I'm not sure. I'm getting different perspectives from all the different, you know, things I listen to and things I read. But I think a lot of it's going to be grounded in AI, a lot of the, you know, next opportunities for growth.
And we've seen some, I've been involved in some projects where we've been using AI cameras or the machine learning cameras, which is a little older stuff, but now coming down and a lot more accessible on the plant floor and accessible for maintenance to keep going on the plant floor. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to overestimate it or oversell it, or
yes,
not for us to oversell it. We can do that, but others, it's easy for customers to misunderstand that. Yeah. It's got the AI. So, you know, it'll plug it in
and it goes.
It'll be good. There's an AI on it. Come on.
Yeah. I was going to ask you that actually, if you're, because I know you're heavy into that side of the business. Is that something that you're seeing, you know, a lot of expectation of plug and play and people are not realizing that there's, you know, at this point in time, there's still support required, again, through Grand Tech or through internal resources. A lot of that buy-in, is that a gap you're seeing?
I think there is we've seen a couple things. One, it's overextended on something. So there's applications where, yeah, you think it looks promising, but you dig in deeper and it will not work. And those are unfortunate. And part of that's, I think, really managing expectations at the beginning, or a greater understanding of kind of what it can and can't do at this point. And that's constantly evolving. So that's a hard one to know well. And it's really hard because these technologies are, again, at least the ones I've seen, you have to train it, you feed all this stuff in, you run it, you kind of can't tell what it's exactly going to do until you've done it, until you've built that AI model and fed it the information in advance. It's not as systematic as older rules-based vision systems where you could tell, yeah, if you see that line on the screen, it's you've got the X contrast, you're good. It's a little more magical. So now the plus side of that is, and this is where, honestly, it's early days in this, but the plus side of that means these systems are more flexible. They're more adaptable. They can be retrained, retuned. So if they are struggling over at some future point because something has changed, inputs changed, the what we accept as a decent product has changed or whatever, you can adapt it. So to me, they're more adaptable, but there's less certainty in some instances of what it's going to be able to do until you've kind of gone in there. If you're on a super complex, and it's so easy to overthink what it can do or have that misconstrued in your head. And that's where we've done presentations, honestly, with large customers across their primarily quality departments to say, there's a quadrant of variation in defects, variation in what's good. So if you're high variation in defect and high variation in what's okay or good to accept, that's not really where you want to be. Even with AI and feeding in all sorts of images, then you got to manage, maintain those, give it enough of them. And hey, now there's a new variation. Good looked different on day 605. So you got to add that into the tuning set. So caution, definitely, but new opportunities, and it is constantly evolving. So, and again, it's more adaptable, flexible. And I think that's huge. And we're still setting that up properly to let customers have a more flexible, adaptable system again than anything kind of previously. So.
I think that will serve them well, going forward. As you know, as everything changes around you, if you're making a big investment up front, it makes sense to have it adaptable so that you can, you know, adjust on the fly. And as, you know, products change or equipment changes, you know, you're able to maintain that investment or, you know, smaller incremental investments and grow the system that you put in.
And time will tell if I'm right on thinking these are that much more, but that's not something that Vision previously was as good at or could promise as much. There's not, hey, I lined everything up with my lights and all this and my camera and my lensing. I'm good. Well, if something changed, now I got to redo it all. So that's not entirely true because lighting is still a huge part of any of it, even with AI. But there's a glimmer of hope that it is going to be more flexible to handle future stuff. So I do love the dream of hooking into those cameras though to do stuff
the magic cameras.
Well, I mean, if you could do stuff, hey, we overstaffed the line. Hey, supervisor, you put four operators on, you should be running three for this particular product. I mean, stuff, magical stuff where it just knows what to do and how everything should be. That's maybe the dream, but who knows if Skynet will come to us that soon. Well, perfect. Well, that's those are kind of all the questions we have time for today. I do want to end with our favorite last question, which is what would you like our next guest to be asked an Industry 4.0 question?
So I'm interested to know, you know, as things are constantly changing, you know, what is their favorite resource to go to keep up to date with what's happening? And sort of also, you know, what's a good resource for people, you know, just getting into the industry to, you know, take the first bite out of the elephant of understanding, you know, what this is all about. And you know, it's my path to, you know, automation integration. It was not, you know, necessarily straight out of school into this industry. So, you know, learning on the fly throughout my career through looking and learning lots of different industries. I'm sort of piecing together all this information, but you know, there's so much to learn and there's so much to know. There's so many resources. So I'm interested to know what, you know, what's their favorite and how they keep up to date with what's happening.
Excellent. No, that's a great one. And I'd be interested to hear the answer too. Always trying to seek ways to stay current. So thank you again, Lisa, for joining me on the Industry 4.0 podcast with Grantech. I hope everyone listening enjoyed that. Hope you learned something. Gain some insights. It is always nice to hear from the industry's perspective from the guests that we have on the show. And again, thank you for joining. We'd love to hear from you. Please follow Grantech on LinkedIn to stay up to date with everything we're doing. Subscribe to the Industry 4.0 podcast with Grantech wherever you get your podcasts. And again, email any questions and please send us your feedback and thoughts. Thank you. And thanks again, Lisa.
Amazing. Thank you.